Hi, I'm Abby. I'm a mom and a writer.
Hi, I'm Melanie. I'm a mom and a writer.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm a mom and a book coach.
Welcome to Mom Writes, where we aren't slick, we aren't fancy, but we are real. This podcast is all about our coaching journey, writing a book from start to finish. It's real life writing, done at the kitchen table or in our spare 15 minutes between work and school pickup. This is how we get it done. It's the dirty laundry behind writing with kids. If you're interested in more information about Author Accelerator and the same coaching program we use, visit Jenny's website at www.authoraccelerator.com.
Hi, I'm Belle Matthews. I have a fun fact. Did you know my mom and Miss Jenny and Miss Mel have been doing Mom Writes for a whole year? Isn't that crazy? Shout out to Susan Kuntz for reminding my mom. Oh, sorry. Shout out to Suzanne Kuntz for reminding my mom. She stinks at remembering stuff like that. Welcome to the show.
All right, so we're back on Mom Writes, only this time Melanie has gone to the doctor, and it's just Jenny and I. Let me start my video for you, Jenny, so that I'm not frozen on your screen. Hi.
Hi.
So Jenny and I were talking here because the news in the Matthews household is that we're moving, and we're not just doing a dinky little move either. We are moving literally down the entire length of the East Coast. Because as my next door neighbor said to me this morning, when you guys do it, like, you really do it big. Like, you know? Yeah, I guess. But we're moving from Rhode Island to the south of Florida. So it's a big move, and it's got to happen pretty fast. So all of a sudden and without warning, because we had no idea this was coming, it's not like we had months to prep for this. I mean, it just, like, one day my husband came home from work and said, hey, they want to move me to Florida and they want me now. So we're just going with the flow and we're shifting gears and we've got boxes and we've got a dumpster and I have a real estate agent and we have all the things now. And I also have a half-finished book. And so, but I refuse to even put the book on pause while I sell my house and pack my family and move 100 million miles.
And why do you refuse that?
I refuse it because, number one, I don't want to stop it. I know that people may see the writing aspect of this as a chore. Like, if you have to let something go, like, let the writing go. But the writing is like stress relief. Why in a time of stress would I want to get rid of the one thing that brings me joy? That just doesn't make any sense to me. It seems counterintuitive now. And I think part of why it's the stress relief and part of why I can keep the momentum going even when life is like actually super chaotic is because we did all that prep work at the beginning. My whole story is laid out. I have this roadmap on where I'm going to go. I understand what my story is about. I know my motivation behind writing it. And now it's just putting the words on the page. And so the really hard part, I feel like, is done. It's mapped out. Now it's the fun part.
So that's a thing that people, I just want to pause to talk about this so much because it's a thing that people usually resist, the mapping out part. And I am not in any way, shape, or form a fan of a big old outline, as you well know, a big old intractable, you know, outline. But that's really different from being able to envision the book. And I'm holding my hands up, even though we're on
audio. She's cupping her hands.
having my hands, like, hold it in your hands. Like, here's my thing. I can see it. It's got a shape and a form, and it's a thing. And here it is. Like that, that's the work people need to do. And it's very different from plotting it out. It's deeper than that. It's, and if you do that, you can bounce around within it. You can go slowly through it because you always know where you are in time and space, or, you know, what your goal is within the story. And it's just so powerful. And this is proof in my mind, what you're going through is proof of that. It's, I mean, that's a big life change with two little kids and a dog and all the pets and all the thing. And in the middle of the school year, we're in the middle of the school year when we're recording this. And you, I mean, first of all, you have some sort of magical mom abilities that you're not totally getting freaked out. And, but second, just that you're, you recognize the work you've done on your story and how powerful it is. And you recognize how important writing is to you. I think that's just amazing. It's awesome.
Well, Sean said this morning, and it was funny because I got up, you know, my sinuses were kicking, and I think the youngest was like talking in her sleep at 3:30 this morning and woke me up, and then I couldn't go back to sleep and I couldn't breathe. And so like at 4:30, I got out of bed and I came downstairs, and I did what I told him I was going to do every single day, which is I'm going to get up early, and if I have 20 minutes, if I have an hour, whatever it is that I have to devote to my writing, I'm going to do it so that I feel good starting my day. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to tackle whatever I have to tackle the rest of the day. And I'm not going to feel guilty about not getting to do my writing. Like I'm going to do it first. I'm going to prioritize it. Even if, and here's the other thing, even if I don't, I have to let go of my word count. I think that's the one thing, though, that I'm going to have to let go of is racing towards this goal of I need so many pages or I need so many words. Because the truth is, at some point, I'm going to have to accept, you know what, we're having an open house today and there are a million things to do and I have 10 minutes and I'm just going to do it. And other days I won't. Other days it's at some point I'm going to reach a point where we're showing the house. The house is clean. We're going to have to be keeping it clean. It's going to be clean. It's going to be mostly packed and I'm going to have some downtime. Like they're going to kick me out of this house at some point and make me go somewhere. And then I'm going to take my computer and I'm going to write. So I know that there's going to be a balance in there somewhere. Not so many words today, but maybe I'll get a lot tomorrow. But also, I'm also having to remind myself that there's a lot about writing that isn't exactly words on the page. I mean, for instance, sitting here and recording this podcast. I mean, I essentially consider this to be part of my writing because this is how I'm learning how to write. This is how I'm learning what to do. You know, you are essentially teaching me here on this podcast. So like today I have, you know, a 2-hour stretch where I know, well, I sat down and I worked on my book, even though I might not have written, you know, 500 words or 1,000 words.
But there's something really important that must be clarified about that, because a lot of people, I agree that most writing is actually not done at the keyboard. Yeah. I think most writing is done when you're in the shower, when you're driving, when you're running errands, if you give that mental real estate to yourself.
When you're packing boxes.
Yeah. And letting things come in to your brain about your story, all of those things, that's writing too. Absolutely. I also am a big fan of wandering on the internet, because you just never know what you're going to find or what is going to hit you and all of that. But people use that as an excuse and they get caught into their research or caught into their reading of other things or, you know, whatever. It's an excuse. So there's a difference between like intentionally doing what we're talking about and unintentionally doing it. And like, oh, I'm, like, I just read this thing that I really resonated with me is, trying to find it. The writer was talking about busy work, that we fill our lives with all this busy work. And she was saying, if you only had 5 hours a day to do your job in, how would you do it? And how would you cut it down? And if you practice, if you actually do that and practice it, there's all these things that you do that you don't really need to be doing, or that you're wasting your time, or, you know, what have you. And I think the same is true with writing. And what you're talking about is, look, I've got X amount of time. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend X amount of time.
It's funny that you say that, because so I guess it would have been Monday morning, because I turned in my work to you Monday right after the girls went to school, because I knew I was going to have to start packing and the real estate agent was coming over. And so I got up at, you know, 5 or 5:30, and I sat down to just write a little bit more. And I was to the point in my story where I needed some quotes from Catherine Morland. And so normally what I would have done was opened up Northanger Abbey and just started reading.
Right.
And I thought to myself, no, I can't do that today. Like, today I don't have that luxury. And so I opened up the book in the Kindle Cloud Reader, and I went to the search bar and I typed in whatever the keyword that I was looking for, and I let it bring up all the pages. And then I scrolled through those couple pages and I found what I needed, and then I made myself move on. And so I took something that I would have otherwise spent an hour and a half, like, enjoying myself and reading this book. I was able to, in like 15 minutes, be in and out and have the information that I needed. And so I was able to cut out some of that, just the busy work.
You know? That's huge. Yeah. And I think, you know, you're being forced into that, obviously, by your circumstances, but maybe you can take that practice into your new life, in your new house. yeah, I love it. It's very, inspiring, really.
Well, and it's a mindset shift. I mean, I feel like there's just so much within the last year that here I am. I'm like, you know, I'll be 39 on Monday. Monday is my birthday. I'm a person who gets super excited about birthdays. I'm like, everyone, it's a birthday. At some point, I know I'll hit the point where I'm like, shh, no, don't tell anyone it's my birthday.
Great to be alive.
I know. And I just get excited. And so I think, you know, here I am, I'm almost 39 years old. And it's taken me this long to realize that sometimes the only change you need to make is a change inside your mind.
I'm laughing because it's like, duh.
Yeah, right? But it's taken me a long time to figure that out. And so, you know, like this morning, Sean said to me, so you got up early. He's like, what'd you do? And I said, well, I came downstairs and I read all my edits, and then I answered a couple of emails, and then I read a chapter in The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, and then I emptied out the entire cabinet in the kitchen and started sorting through, and then I packed 2 boxes. I was like, then I came upstairs so I could iron the clothes for the girls, and I'm waking you up because I need the light, and...
Ironed their clothes for school?
Yeah. Do other people not do that?
I mean, I think you would have had to pay me $1 million to do that. You do that every day?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Because I don't want them to go to school looking like schleps.
And ironing fixes that?
Well, they're not wrinkled. They don't look like... because your drawers are all crammed full of crap, and so... They pull it out, it's all wrinkled, so I just hit it with the iron.
Wow. Did they look better than other people?
I mean, I like to think they're super cute, but...
Do people comment upon how good your children look?
Not necessarily, but I just like it when they're ironed and fresh.
That's so cool. Isn't it interesting the different things people do? Like, who knew?
So somebody said to me the other day when I was talking about, I was at my girlfriend's house who's a veterinarian. And I felt like she would just understand this comment. We were talking about something and I said, well, yeah, you know, like when you iron your jeans after you've worn them for a couple of days and then they smell like hot dog. And she looked at me. She's like, you iron your jeans even after you've worn them for a couple of days?
Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
I said, yeah, because I try and make it look like they haven't been worn for a couple of days. And I like iron the knees flat. I was like, but then they smell like hot dog because the dog spends all day with his face in my lap. And I thought that she is a veterinarian of all people would like understand where I was coming from. And she's like, yeah, I don't get the whole iron in your jeans thing. And I was like, well, maybe I'm the only person. I iron everything. I always iron.
I've never ironed a pair of jeans in fact, my entire life.
What? What about when they sit in the dryer for too long?
No, never in my entire life have I ironed a pair of jeans. this is fascinating. But... it doesn't have to do with writing,
no.
Being a mom, but do you have some particular things about this submission we should probably talk about? There was some interesting stuff.
We'll shift the gear. So let's see, because I made some comments inside the thing. And what was the comment? There was like a big overall thing. Oh, so one of the things that I sent you was you talked about how you think there's a place for me to add in about the mom. Because as my story has progressed, you know, we've sort of dropped the mom thread and picked up more of a different thread of being normal, like that sort of, we've kind of let the mom thing go.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my head, it's not that the mom thing disappeared. It's just that the mom thing didn't necessarily belong in this story. And so my question to you was, if I think the story of the mom could be book two, how do you include details in book one? Like, how much do you include? How much of book two do you have to know to include some of those things in book one? How do you weave that in to make book one stand alone, but also leave yourself open?
Right. So this is huge, a huge question for anybody who's thinking about a series. And the key thing is that the book one has to 110% stand on its own. It has to have a resolution. It has to have a satisfaction delivered to the reader. It's got to have that because that's how you're going to get an agent sold. That's how they're going to sell it. It's always sold one book at a time. So thing one is you've got to think like that. And then if you're thinking about a series, you do want to take some time to sketch out the whole universe. Mm-hmm. So if book two is about the mom, which is a great idea, by the way, because she can go into a book now in book two, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So basically, book one is a whole setup for that because does she go into a book now in book one?
So no, she doesn't actually ever go into a book. She figures out how to get characters out of a book.
Right, but she doesn't go into
She never goes into a book.
Right. So, I mean, it's very organic that you would have another story where she goes into a book and where she would have good reason to do that and all that. So what I was asking about the mom, I was confused in my head about where you had ended up. I was like, wait, is this still about the mom at all? Is this not about the mom? So I did get confused, and that's not from what you wrote. That's just me. But
Well, we did write at the beginning. I did write a whole like chapter where she's like, you know, kind of like lusting after the neighbor's mom. And I think what's going to have to happen is in the second draft that disappears or it changes into there's a different emotional thread that runs through that. Like there's a different focus.
She wants a normal mom. Yeah. That makes total sense. So what I would do though, the reason I was asking for this story about the mom, there was a moment why did I ask at the end,
hasn't he ever carried the burden of a secret? Hadn't he ever liked a girl and known how amazing it felt to impress her? So that her dad has disappeared inside his book.
Yeah.
And she turns to page 25 and she's getting ready to try and read him back out. But she doesn't know what she's going to say to him. They've just had this argument.
Right.
And so it's right at the end of what I wrote.
Right.
So, because then I started thinking, like, if I was a kid, like, I put myself back into my, like, sixth grade, seventh grade shoes, where I used to get super pissed. Like, if I got in trouble for something, and I'd stomp my feet, and I'd make my argument, and my dad would make his argument, and I wouldn't listen to my dad's argument, because obviously my dad's argument was stupid.
Right.
So my argument was right, and I would get mad, and I'd storm up the stairs, and I would lock myself in my room, and I always knew it was coming.
Right.
Where my dad would come, and he would knock on my door, and he would always try and play nice, and he would always say this thing where it's like, well, you know, tomorrow's a new day.
Right.
Which now as an adult, I say that all the time to my girls, like, look. Like, you might be in trouble now, but tomorrow's a new day. Like, don't worry about it. But as a kid, like, I used to get super pissed, and I just wished he would just go away.
Right.
And so that's what I was trying to do here. And then I thought to myself, like, well, if my dad had ever gone away, like, to what extent would I really want him back, you know? Well, and so what would I say?
And that's kind of what I was getting at here is, I think you wrote something. For some reason, my thing is stuck, and it won't let me scroll in your document, which is so dumb.
Yeah, the question was, you know, Jenny brought up in the end of my edits, because Bernadette and her father have a fight, and she tells her father she wishes that he would disappear, and he actually does, like for real, disappears into his book, and she has no idea how to get him back out. And so she has an exchange with another character that she's sort of able to not read out, but read to the surface of Northanger Abbey, which is her dad's book. She reads the main character, Catherine Moreland, to the surface of the book, and she's talking to her, and Catherine basically tells her how to read her father to the surface of the book so that she can talk to him. And you know, she wasn't sure what to say to him, if she read him out, how to say she was sorry. And she's thinking to herself that she wasn't sorry for sharing her secret with Logan. She wasn't sorry for taking Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. She wasn't sorry for all these things that happened that she and her father fought about. She wished that her father would understand. Hadn't he ever carried the burden of a secret? Hadn't he ever liked a girl? And so Jenny says, well, does she wonder about her mom here? And so this has kind of prompted us to take a look at adding in an element of missing her mom, needing her mom, her father disappearing, letting that up the stakes of the story. Correct? Is that?
Yeah. So there's what happened here was that you did something, I think, inadvertently that's really great, and it really deepens the story, which is that you had her dad disappear for real, which is a thing she's wanted this whole time. And you have it that he's kind of just resting in the book, right?
Yeah, that he was doing his own version of what she was doing. It's like the dad locking himself in his room, you know, and not coming out to talk.
Right. And so the, I think you need to just push that even harder, that here her dad goes away. And what I was asking you had to do with, it touches on world building, but so he's in the book. Does time pass in a different way in the book? And could it be that he goes in the book and hasn't been there before? Hasn't, like, I realize we haven't seen him go in and out of a book ever. Mm-hmm. So could he go in there and somehow be stuck or confused or not clear? And then she's really left alone. Mm-hmm. And that would be huge because it's what she's wanted, to be left alone.
So, you know, I'm looking at one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how to do effectively, because I do have, it's not really two threads going on in the story, but there are two separate parts of my story. There's sort of Bernadette and her life with her dad and the book world and what goes on in that element of the story. But then mm-hmm. there's also the element of Bernadette and Logan and his secret and her secret and their struggles at school. And I finally got to the point where they were both coming together. So like with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was able to bring, you know, when Bernadette says to Logan, I'll take you home. I'll take you home in my car. But he puts it together that the car is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And the two worlds have collided. So from this point out, like if I stay with Bernadette in the thread of the dad and missing the dad and not having the dad, do I still need to be aware of how far the story progresses without bringing in the thread of Logan? Or now that they're sort of together, does that make sense? Because I
no, I'm trying to process your question. Can you say it again?
Okay. So like, for instance, earlier in my story, you know, if I focused on the dad for too long, you would say, don't drop the thread of Logan. We need to bring him back. Yes. And then if I focused on Logan for too long, you would say, don't drop the thread of the dad. But now that Logan knows her secret.
Right.
Should I start intertwining the two even more? So like, for instance, her dad is gone. She's in the house by herself. Like, she's got to figure out how to get him out. Should I bring Logan in?
I think so because I mean, if you think, we talked earlier about the logic, right? So mm-hmm. the logic of that is that Logan knows her secret. She's gonna lean on him because nobody else knows her secret. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, here's somebody not only who she likes, but who is seeing her, which is what the whole book is about. Mm-hmm. So I think she should let him in, and then you have all kinds of stuff to play with in terms of what is it like for her to be seen? And so, you know, and then also, what's it like for her to be gone mm-hmm. from her dad and alone? And all the things that she's been wanting are now true and present, right?
So in order to weave Logan sort of back in and bring the two worlds together a little bit more, it wouldn't be necessarily unrealistic in a story about magic books, it wouldn't be unrealistic for the dad to disappear and her first reaction to essentially just be sheer panic, not be thinking very clearly and not think like, oh, I'm just going to open the book and read my dad out, which is essentially what I figured would happen, that she would just open the book and be able to read her dad out, because we all know like that's how it's going to work. But
that's too easy.
But if she panics, and which is quite honestly, I mean, that's what I would have done. I probably would have panicked. I'm in this house. I'm all by myself. I've never been by myself before. you know, my kids don't even go to the bathroom by themselves yet. They're like so afraid of the radiators and the noises and everything about the house. And she lives in this big creepy house. So like, to me, it would be reasonable.
It's the perfect age for that too, right?
Right. Like, and so
to be left alone, it's not child abuse to leave a 13-year-old alone. It's, you know,
but yeah, so she could like essentially get back in the car. She could get back in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and like hover outside of Logan's window.
Yes.
And, you know, like Logan,
yes,
you know,
yes.
I need you.
So that's what I was saying is you set this thing up that you then didn't take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
So just take advantage of the thing that you set up and, mm-hmm. you know, that you just came unfrozen. You were not there before.
Yeah. I've done something to my screen. I don't know what's going on. Oh, there it is.
Yeah. So I would double down and make it bad for her. You set that up. Now let it be bad. Let her suffer. And let her suffer in the exact way that she has been afraid of.
And she could suffer in multiple ways. She could suffer because her dad, you know, isn't there. And so like the ramifications that has on the book world, but she could also like say in her attempt to get Logan as a confidant, fellow problem solver, whatnot. Logan essentially could sneak out of the house to help her solve her problem. He could get caught by his mom, who now thinks Bernadette's a bad influence. Because that would be a realistic ramification of what would happen if, you know, a kid sneaks out in the middle of the night.
You've totally got it.
Okay.
If Logan's mom is against her, that's terrible. He's her person now. He's her, you know, friend and her secret keeper and all of that. So that's perfect. You've got it. So you see what I mean? That this mm-hmm. is a place you want to pull it out, not compress it.
Okay.
Because this is where actually everything is going to go down. And she's got to figure out, how do I live without my dad? You know, or what do I do with my dad? And she's got to resolve in her head, oh, hey, my dad lives in a different world. Mm-hmm. And then she's got to figure out how to get him back. She's got to figure out how to get Amelia Bedelia. You know, like, she's got a lot on her plate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want. So
stop worrying about, like, the fact that I'm convinced that, like, I almost see, like, this ticking time bomb happening where I'm like, as my word count gets higher, I'm like, oh my God, I've only got 15,000 words to wrap up this story. Oh my God. Like, it's better to have a whole bunch, right? And then to go back and cut some of it out than it is to leave like these big sections where it's.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you want there to be a there to mm-hmm. edit.
Okay.
And it's much easier to trim something down. And there's middle grade. Like, I know there's obviously you're talking about the middle grade word count. So let me just look that up.
I think 50,000 is kind of the high end.
Right. So, you know, you can, that's the time for dealing with that is not now.
Okay.
It's, I mean, unless you're writing 100, you're on track to write 100,000 words. That's not the time to worry about it now. If you're writing 5,000, there is nothing better than having more words than you need and getting to trim it down. It's the best.
Good. Okay. Okay. So then I can sort of let that worry go, because that was one of the things that had sort of, I don't know, like it's like we're all racing towards these word counts and we want to have word counts and the more words you write every day, the better you feel and et cetera, et cetera. But then I keep thinking like, but am I getting towards my top high end? And I haven't reached my ending yet. And so, okay. I was just worried.
I wouldn't worry about that right now. And then on the question of the mother, so the mother is not really central to this book, except mm-hmm. that having a mother for a middle schooler is equivalent to being normal.
Mm-hmm.
and if her dad is so weird, having a mother, she would probably picture the mom in some very fantasy type way. Like, I want a mom, and my mom would be beautiful and, you know, caring and all the things you would think your mother would be.
My mother is Cinderella.
Right. So she's going to have some weird stuff going on with mom yearning. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two reasons why I think you should bring it up. When her dad goes missing, it feels like that would be the natural thing mm-hmm. for her to think about. And then also, that was my comment, which I can now actually look at, where I said, hadn't the dad ever liked a girl? Because, so when you talked about the two things colliding, what's colliding is she likes this boy and this boy likes her, and that's new. And that's changing her in a really profound way, because Logan actually sees who she is mm-hmm. and what she's about, and she's vulnerable and shares with him. It's like a real relationship. So she would naturally think, like, if her dad doesn't get it, or if Logan's mom is trying to pull them apart, whatever, she would naturally be like, didn't you guys ever feel this way? And especially since she doesn't have a mom, she's going to be like, maybe my dad doesn't actually get that. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's some really profound things. I guess what I'm just reflecting to you is you have some very profound things set up here, and I don't think you are even aware of it. Like, you did some really good work, and I don't think you're super aware of it.
Well, I like sort of the love aspect to where it's all going. So I've been doing a little research about what kids will tolerate and not tolerate, like how much love in a story. So, like, B, who is 8, like, essentially she's been reading graphic novels and there, she's reading graphic novels sort of about middle school, but each one that she reads, there's usually one scene where there's a kiss.
Yeah.
And it just tears her up. She just cannot handle it. It is just gross, gross, gross. And so it was funny, because I had lunch with KJ Dell'Antonia the other day, and her daughter was with us. And her daughter is in middle school. And so I thought, oh, and her daughter's a big reader. So I was like, oh, I got questions for you. And so I said to her, like, how do you feel about reading a book that has a first kiss in it? And she was like, well, I mean, literally, it was hilarious, because her mother is sitting right there, and she goes, I mean, it's not like I've ever kissed a boy or anything. And I mean, I wouldn't kiss a boy. And she, like, totally, I was like, I'm not saying you, girl. I'm like, would you read about it? And she goes, well, I know some girls in the grade ahead of me have kissed a boy.
Oh, this is perfect market research. So 8th graders have kissed a boy, but not 7th graders.
Mm-mm. No, wait. So her daughter is in 6th grade, and she said in 7th grade they've kissed, but not in 6th grade. That's super gross, and she got super upset even thinking about the fact that we might think she had done it. And so that's so perfect, because
now you know that
Bernadette is in 7th grade. So that's the exact age that we... So I thought, that's perfect. So I know I want to add in the kiss. So I loved that you had said, like, they need to ride Chitty Chitty Bang Bang to the house, and then they need to feel the wind in their hair, and then maybe he, like, kisses her before he gets out of the car. And
well, that wasn't random, because remember, that's not just random, like, feel the wind in the hair and fly the car. It's because Logan just said
that's what he wants
This is a guy that has not taken his baseball hat off. So feeling the wind in the hair is profound for him. It's mm-hmm. not a little thing. It's not just like, oh, this is cool to fly a plane.
And I ended the scene because I kept telling myself, we don't need to see every single little moment. Like, I need to push the story forward. But you're right, I missed an opportunity for that to be a really crucial part of the story. And I think I had originally intended for the kiss to come towards the end of the book, but isn't it more powerful to have a taste of something and then have it taken away? So it's not just he asked me to be his girlfriend and now he breaks up with me because Claire is making fun of us and the school is making fun of us, but it was like he was my boyfriend and my first kiss, and it like just makes it juicier and it makes it harder, like it the fall is more hurtful.
But it's not, remember that this kiss and this relationship is not in any way just about getting a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that is not what this is about, that's like the plot level thing.
Yeah.
Or being the girl who got kissed, or that's not what it's about. It's about being seen and being known and being real and vulnerable with somebody and having them share a secret. Like it's the way that Claire hurts people is random and, just random and mean.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you can be hurt when you're vulnerable with somebody and you give yourself to them, that's a whole other level of terror.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, as adults, that's the real terror. So that's what it's about, having her. So when up on page, I think this is the reason that this might be this spot is because she's super vulnerable now.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad's gone. She's alone. She's scared. She doesn't understand what's happening. There's a freaking magic library in her attic. She doesn't have any friends. She doesn't have any allies. So of course she goes to Logan and now reveals this whole new level of vulnerability to him.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like my dad's a freak and I've got this weird thing and there's magic cars and stuff, but like I don't have anyone. I'm really alone and I'm scared and I don't know what to do. Will you help me? So she brings him in. So the kiss is part of that.
So the kiss doesn't happen the first time when she takes him home in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So she comes home on a high to find her father waiting for her. And they get in the argument. And then he disappears and she goes after him. The kiss happens after he disappears.
I'm just thinking from a story perspective, the kiss mm-hmm. should happen when she has, because what you just talked about with that market test you did with that girl is that this is a very, 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 very big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary and it's not something to take lightly. And it's terrifying to be that vulnerable. And they don't even want you to know that they're thinking about that. So, you know, it's a very big deal. So I don't think it should just be, I like you and you like me and you kissed me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should have meaning behind it, which would be when she's at her, not that we want to have like, oh, the damsel in distress gets swooped up by the boy. It's not that. It's I opened myself up to you because I'm hurt and I need help. And that feeling, I mean, it reminds me of, I don't want to say what I'm about to say, cause it's so embarrassing, but I feel like I should just, I mean, it's not actually embarrassing.
Say it. Just say it.
In shape or form. It's just weird to say on some podcast, but,
on your own podcast.
No, I know, but just out to the world. It's just a weird thing. But I remember the night that my husband's mother died. It had been a very horrible time in our lives, not just because of that, but his father had just died.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like this horrible 1-2 punch. And we had an infant, 1-year-old, and I behaved very, 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 very badly around his mother's death. Like, I'm embarrassed. It was 24 years ago, and I'm still embarrassed by my behavior, because I was like, can't she just die already so we can go home? Because we were in Houston. She was in Houston, and we were lived in LA, and I had this infant, and it was like, this is not acceptable that it's taking her so long to die. And could we just, you know, and why can't the hospice people tell us? And like, I was really bad as a human being and as a wife and as a person. And, you know, in a million ways, I was in a very bad, dark, not good place. And I was taking it out of my husband, like, and why are you making us stay here? Like, it was just terrible. But I remember that when she actually did die, then we came together. Like, we had great sex is what I'm trying to get at. Because, and I understand that that's a thing that happens a lot when people die. Mm-hmm. There's like this reaching toward life and reaching toward connection and reaching toward what you share with people here on this earth, and
proving to yourself that you're still alive, that you're still here, that
and so it's not like, and I, that's kind of what I'm seeing this kiss as, is like, I've been terrible to my dad and now he's gone and I'm scared and I need, I don't have anyone. I haven't let myself meet anyone or be friends, or cause it's so mean and horrible out there in middle school, but I can't, I need somebody. And I've already opened myself up to this boy. And, you know, that's where I see the kiss coming. Is that, does that make sense?
It, I know, does.
That was a super long story.
But it makes total sense, because it's not just about a kiss and it's not just about a first kiss.
Right.
It's about the power of her connecting with him for the first time. I mean, it's like it would be the middle school version of sex, right? I mean,
that's exactly what I'm getting at.
And
yeah.
So, you know, now the trick is, so, and here's where, so there's part of me that as I'm writing this book, I'm like, you know, I think I want it to be empowering for girls. I want girls to learn a good lesson. I want girls to learn, like, you know, how nice boys act. I don't, you know, Logan's not a bad boy. He's not somebody that you should be embarrassed to take home to your family. You know, so like, I had originally put her driving the car, and then somewhere in my mind, I switched when he realized it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And I thought, well, she's going to be nice and let him drive it, because obviously this is like his dream. But you're right. Like, when you put in there, she needs to be the one driving the car, because it's like, yeah, because this book is not, boys probably aren't going to be reading this book. Girls are going to be reading this book. Should I make it to where she kisses him first?
I mean,
or is that like,
I mean, it's, I mean, what you're playing with here is really big tropes and really big stuff. Like, we do live in a society where in some ways girls wait to be picked and girls wait to be kissed and girls are objects and girls take that on. And my understanding from my girls who are older, my understanding is that notion is really not baked into their lives anymore. I'm really not going to tell these stories about my girls, but in my conversations with them about their intimate relationships, I do understand that there is a much more female-empowered way
mindset
of being in the world that I think has changed a lot since I was in high school
because
and college.
I know in middle school, I would have never held a boy's hand first. I would have never kissed
a
boy first. I would have never asked a boy to go out on a date with me first.
No!
I would have never done any of those things. And
but I think that that's really different now, and probably not. I mean, my guess is that the middle school, I don't know. So you're going to have to decide what kind of a world you want it to be. It, you know, there is still, we do still live in that society. Let's not mistake ourselves. But
I want to walk a fine line between number one, not confusing the mindset when I was in middle school with the mindset of today's middle schooler.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Because I'm not writing for myself. I'm writing for kids today. So there's one there.
Right.
Two, the whole reason why I want to write this is like, what would I say to my girls if I'm writing the point of view of a non-existent mother from a non-existent mother? What am I telling this child? And of course, I have to suppress the whole like, well, you probably shouldn't be kissing boys until you're married anyway. I have to suppress that because that's totally not realistic.
The world view you want to write about, you get to be the god of your own story.
I want girls to read it and feel like girls kick ass. I mean, because they do. I don't want to write a story where there's a girl who's like afraid to hold a boy's hand, because at the beginning of the book, she is.
Right? Like, please kiss me when she could just kiss him. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I guess now the trick is that when I go back to write this part of the story, how to bake in that mental change that happens where suddenly she feels noticed and that's empowering and she feels like she can make the next move.
But it's not just noticed like flirty, oh, you're pretty noticed.
No, it's like he values, you like he said in the car, like, I know you think your dad is weird, but this is stuff I always pretended to do when I read books, but you never had to pretend.
Yeah, it's so good.
I mean, he really totally digs this world. And I think what would be super cool is to even go back in and bake in more that maybe Logan is kind of a bookworm. And she is not, ironically, after having grown up in this family. And so Logan sees a value in that life that she just doesn't have an appreciation for.
Right. No, I think it's good. Okay. So what you're getting at, and I love that it's happening now, is the really deep story. And so I think that's why I saw in this chunk of writing that it would be time to bring up the mom a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked before, how do I seed in the mom stuff in this book in case I want to make another book with the mom?
So really, I could just seed in her longing or yearning for one without having any true specifics planted?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's very tied into just your story in general. She's got this weird dad. She doesn't have a mom. She wants a normal life. A normal life means having a mom. She would imagine what that mom would be, but it's not going to dominate her thought. It's just going to be, I would think it would be there.
And it's not going to leave the reader unsatisfied with mom questions. That's what I was worried about.
Exactly.
I had almost gotten to the point where I was afraid to even mention the mom because I didn't want it to leave the reader unsatisfied if I brought it up too much.
Right. Exactly. So you don't want to belabor it like, oh, I wish I had a mom. You know, you don't want that. It's just little, like just the thing that I said, like, didn't my dad ever like a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Or like when she's in the car with, Logan's parents, you know, thinking here's this happy family. I wish I had a mom. that just, mm-hmm. you know, just a little bit, so that you could pick that up in the next book.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, you actually have some really big stuff going on here, I just want to reflect back to you how good it is and how big it is, because you've built this, you've done this on purpose, and it's awesome. And you get to now don't squander it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm after. Don't squander it.
Hi, I'm Beatrix Matthews. I'm 8. I don't like to read kissing books. They're gross, just so you know. Join us back here next week for more of my mom's podcast, Mom Writes. Da-da-da-da, music! Where's the music? Literally, where's the music?